CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, your weekly report on Earth systems, human development, justice, and science. Today, the Gaza genocide goes on with no end in sight, supported, defended, and shielded by powerful Western states. And a people's tribunal releases a Gaza declaration. This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Israel's war on Gaza is about to enter its 20th month, widely described as genocidal by legal scholars and human rights experts. Israel and its conjoined twin, Israel-USA, we call it, say it's nothing of the sort. One would hardly expect genocide perpetrators to acknowledge their crime of all crimes. Few criminals do. Israel's ability to commit high crimes with impunity, aided and assisted by Israel-USA, makes the world a more dangerous place, Norway's international development minister said the other day. Quote, genocide is the worst crime a country can do, and the worst crime that politicians can do, and this should not be polarized, unquote, Osmond Alkrust said, according to The Guardian, without indicating where or when Alkrust said this. Western politicians shouldn't be aiding and abetting Israeli genocide, Alkrust might have said. They are. Alongside Israel-USA, the UK and Germany are Israel's most generous arms suppliers. The Netherlands sends Israel spare parts for the F-35 bombers it's been using to lay Gaza to waste. Turkey, not really a Western power, but a member of NATO, happily funnels jet fuel to Israel, all the while condemning Israel for its crimes. Back on May 19th, the UK, France, and Canada suggested they may hold Israel to account at some point. No sign of that yet. Quote, the Israeli government's denial of essential humanitarian assistance to the civilian population of Gaza is unacceptable and risks breaching international humanitarian law, the British, French, and Canadians said in their joint press release. Risks. The Brits, French, and Canadians are hedging their bets. So are the most powerful Arab states who've yet to lift a pinky to halt the mass murder of their Palestinian confreres. For his views on this sorry international affair, the GPM reached out to Christopher Gunness. Gunness is the former UN Director for Strategic Communications and Advocacy in the Middle East and chief spokesperson for UNRWA, the UN Relief and Works Agency. These days, Christopher Gunness is the executive director of the Myanmar Accountability Project. We reached Chris Gunness in London. Welcome to the Green Planet Monitor, Christopher Gunness, once again.
Thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So what do you make of all these developments? Is this just all a lot of hot air? Or is the UK, are the UK, France, Britain, France, and Canada, and possibly even Germany about to impose sanctions on Israel?
Well, I think we have to see this for the hypocrisy and the fig leaf that it all was. Just 5 days ago, Britain said it was suspending trade talks with Israel because of its actions in Gaza, violations of international humanitarian law, etc. And then today, on the Twitter feed of the UK and Israel, which is an official website, it's announced that the UK trade envoy is going to a trade fair, guess where? In Israel. So it took 5 days for the fig leaf to fall away and for the truth belief to be revealed. And I think it's very clear that Keir Starmer, who has said he is an unequivocal supporter of Zionism, his instinctive reaction when the blockade was imposed, when the Israelis said that they were going to impose a total ban on food, water, and fuel, Keir Starmer backed that and then after huge controversy, he had to withdraw that. So I think, you know, his instinct is viscerally pro-Zionist and anti-Palestinian. But of course, he has to deal with an electoral reality. And the electoral reality is that at the last election, and indeed in the recent by-elections, what we saw is certain candidates standing on a Gaza-only ticket and doing very, very well, and thus sending a very powerful signal to Keir Starmer that there is a price electorally to be paid. So I think, you know, we've seen his visceral instinct against his electoral conscience, as it were. And I think those two things are in a constant state of flux. But I think that, as I say, his instincts are always to come down on the side of Israel, in this case, to be complicit in genocide, because the International Court of Justice, in its ruling on the occupation, and of course, the blockade of Gaza is very much a part of the occupation, the court said that the occupation is illegal because it denies the Palestinians the right of self-determination and it must end immediately, and member states must take action immediately. And when the great British legal scholar and jurist Philippe Zand stood up in the court making his deposition, he made it very clear that the member states and those who've signed the Genocide Convention and those who have are members of the International Court of Justice, UN member states, have to do everything to make sure that they're not complicit in genocide. And he said, no trade relations, no financial relations, no military support, no diplomatic support, no nothing are the exact words he used. So if Keir Starmer wants to get on the right side of history, if he wants to stop being complicit in genocide, he needs to impose sanctions against Israel. That's clear. And by the way, it's not just the UK. It's all member states of the United Nations, because the International Court of Justice is the highest judicial organ of the United Nations. So it's very clear what has to happen. The position that used to be the so-called very radical position of the BDS movement, boycott, disinvest, sanctions movement, which, you know, the Israelis said was anti-Semitic, which of course it isn't. But the position of the BDS movement has now become the position of the highest court in the world, the World Supreme Court, the ICJ. So these politicians, like Keir Starmer, like the Germans, we're now seeing the Germans, even the Germans, you know, the staunchest supporter of the genocide, like Britain, supplying logistical and military support, even the German Chancellor has basically said that he feels that German support for the attack on Gaza is now going to be seriously questioned, and that he said previously that the Israeli government cannot justify this on the grounds that it is attempting to defeat Hamas. So those arguments are all washing away now. And I think the reality is that we are going to see more and more pressure on these governments to do something. But of course, it's 19 months too late. They are all on the wrong side of history. They have all been complicit in genocide. And when you see the pictures of the emaciated children and babies, when I saw them, I was reminded of the images of the liberation of Hitler and the Nazis' death camps, those skeletal humans barely alive. And that's what Israel, the state arguably founded in part on those experiences of the death camps of the Holocaust, is now inflicting on its pretty much defenseless neighbor. To call this a war is ridiculous. A war is a war between two sides. The people of Gaza are completely defenseless, and they're being killed at the rate of about 100 a day, half of which are women and children.
But the UK, France, Germany, Canada, the European Union, well, forget about the United States, which I refer to as Israel USA. So I see Israel and the United States being conjoined twins, effectively a single unit. But the Western powers, setting aside the United States, they do not want to say that Israel is violating international law categorically. Like here in this statement from the UK, France, and Canada, the Israeli government's denial of essential humanitarian assistance to the civilian population risks breaching international humanitarian law, when everybody knows denying essential humanitarian assistance to a civilian population by an occupying power, no less, under Geneva 4, is a flagrant breach of international law. But they say it risks breaching international law. And of course, they won't talk about genocide. They won't use the G word. So they I want to say instinctively, but it isn't instinctual. It's quite purposeful and intentional. They will not say that Israel is violating international law, because that would place a burden on them, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. And also it would raise political problems with the Israelis. So Netanyahu lashes out, for example, after the killings in Washington recently. Netanyahu astonishingly links the statement that these governments had made to this killing, as if somehow, you know, it was provoked by. And of course, that is Netanyahu's stock in trade. He needs the world to be anti-Semitic, because if the world is anti-Semitic, you've got this fortress Israel post-Holocaust psychosis empowering the sort of Jewish supremacists, the far right in Israel, and it keeps Netanyahu in power. But it also allows him, in his own view, to override international law and to commit a genocide. And so he needs to be able to say that these countries are anti-Semites. So he lashes out. And the sad fact is that the statement, the weakness of this statement, I think is a perfect example of where Western politicians, European Union, and Britain, and North America also, feel very browbeaten. They feel frightened. They're worried about these false accusations of anti-Semitism. And I think that's what we're seeing. And beyond violations of international law, I mean, let's be specific. It is genocide. I mean, in its provisional measures of January last year, the International Court of Justice was very clear that Israel had to allow unfettered humanitarian access. And what we've seen is the words of Netanyahu, the words of President Herzog, the words of former Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, the words of Smotrich, Ben-Gvir, and others being put into action. They have said they want to clear Gaza. They want to do an ethnic cleansing. They want to do a genocide. They want to bomb Gaza back to the Stone Age. A public official even talked about dropping a nuclear bomb on Gaza, though already, of course, several times Hiroshima has been dropped on Gaza. So it's not just, you know, this phrase, perhaps violating international law. There are very specific aspects, using aid, humanitarian aid, as a weapon of war, starvation as a weapon of war. You know, the ICC, which has personally sent out an arrest warrant for Netanyahu. You know, these are very specific crimes committed against very specific people by very specific perpetrators. And that's what we're looking at. The fact is that the levers of international law are there if any of these powerful member states actually want to pull them. If they wanted to, they could arrest Netanyahu. The next time he flies over Canada, his plane should be brought in, should land, and he should be sent to The Hague. It's, you know, it's what happened recently to former President Duterte in the Philippines. You know, he was handed over. He's a wanted war criminal. And that's exactly what should happen to Netanyahu. So if the member states actually want to use it, the international system, the system of international law, has got to the point where it can be implemented. It's just not happening.
And I'm not sure you're aware, Chris Gunness, that there's a three-day event taking place in Sarajevo. It's actually happening at this very instant. The Gaza Tribunal, with a whole host of special experts and people beaming in from around the world. And I was just watching, and a woman named Penny Green, you may know Penny Green.
She's in a university in London. She's an excellent advocate and a very brilliant lawyer.
And she's actually, I think, maybe coined a term, senescicide. Senescicide, senescence is growing old and dying. And she refers to senescicide. She gave a presentation just a few hours ago arguing that Israel is actually pursuing a purposeful policy and strategy of disabling the Gazan population, creating a population of disabled people that won't be able to recover for generations. You know, denying, of course, destroying hospitals and specialized wards, denial of antibiotics and sterile dressings and leading to the development of chronic infections, denying essential medicines like insulin for people who suffer from diabetes, denying entry of epoxy resins for prostheses, denying entrance of wheelchairs and lifts. And of course, all this after using systematically bullets that disable, that don't kill, but actually cause incredibly grievous wounds, leading to the largest cohort of child amputees in the world in Gaza. There's something like, 15 or 20,000 child amputees in Gaza at this moment. So it's a strategy aimed at actually disabling, creating crippling disabilities that affect not just...
Yeah, I mean, this actually, if you remember the so-called Great March of Return in 2012, when people in Gaza, unarmed civilians, marched towards the fence, which the Israelis put up around Gaza. And as they approached just a few hundred meters, you know, or nearer to the fence, Israeli snipers opened fire. And a subsequent UN report, and it's really worth reading the UN report into Israel's response to the Great March of Return, they deliberately shot children, women, unarmed people, unarmed protesters in the legs, deliberately creating a burden on the hospital system, deliberately creating a generation of disabled children who would be, in some sense, I hate to use the word, but a burden on their societies. Because as you just said, Israel then blocked wheelchairs, equipment to create prosthetics, all of that, you know. So it's a deliberate strategy. It's not, this isn't new. It's been going on for years. It's been reported on by the United Nations in clear view. I mean, as with the genocide of the last 19 months, this has been live streamed. I mean, make no mistake about it. I you know, when Keir Starmer looks at his children and they say, Daddy, what did you do to stop the genocide in the 21st century that we and our classmates and our contemporaries saw on our iPhones and on our mobile phones and on our televisions every day? What did you do? You know, you've got a situation where 150 or so babies are born every day in Gaza, and there are not anesthetics for women to have cesarean sections with anesthetics. So there are literally dozens of cesarean sections taking place in Gaza on pregnant women without anesthetic. And I love to be in the room when Mrs. Sarma says, honey, you know, there are all these reports of women, look at our children, remember them when they were born? Perhaps even remember me when I had my cesarean section. I don't know how they gave birth to their children. But, you know, when his wife turns to him and says, honey, you know, what were you doing to prevent a situation when women were having cesarean sections without anesthetic? I can't wait. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in that room. And when people say to the German chancellor, when his family say, Papa, you know, they look like they'd come out of Auschwitz, those kids. They look so emaciated. You could see their bones. And children are dying of starvation. People are dying of starvation as we speak. I mean, it's a combination of the sheer mental trauma of going through yet another huge bombardment. You know, it's terrifying when these bombs start falling down on Gaza. And actually what happens is kids have been through like three, this is their fourth trauma. The second trauma re-traumatized them because they can remember the first, the third bombardment, they remember the first and the second, and they're now dealing with the third. And on it goes. They're being multiply traumatized. On top of that, they've not been able to eat a proper diet with fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, meat if they want to eat meat. And so you've and then the complete degradation. You know, all but I think the figure, well, pretty much every hospital in Gaza has been destroyed or damaged. And as you quite rightly outlined, there are all these different categories of drugs that are just being banned from Israel. So that's the context in which children are dealing with malnourishment. And that, of course, that context makes them even more fragile. So people talk about, you know, the risk of, or the people of Gaza are facing starvation. There is no risk of, it's actually happening. The risk is gone. You know, there is no facing starvation. They are starving to death, everybody. So It's very clear what's going on. It's very clear what the nation that, on the ashes of the Holocaust, this state was created, and those people who were given the protection of this state are now inflicting these ghetto situations, these Auschwitz-style situations. I mean, obviously, 6 million people have not been killed. The Israelis have not created a special railway line to take them there. They have not created a special gas to gas them with. However, as I say, when you look at those images of those children in Gaza, it's really hard not to think of those emaciated Jews and others who survived the death camps and those horrific pictures we saw of the Allies liberating the death camps. That's what these pictures in Gaza remind me of. And of course, the historical ironies are clanging, are horrific, that it's the group whose forebears and whatever was subjected to that monstrous crime, that huge disgraceful indignity, are now inflicting these monstrous indignities on the Palestinians. And of course, as the occupying power, Israel has a very special responsibility to protect life. And of course, it's inflicting a genocide.
I was watching an interview on BBC the other day, and the announcer, the news person, was talking to an Israeli government spokesperson who was saying, Hamas is stealing aid. The trouble is that Hamas is, we're sending in trucks and truckloads of aid, food, and you name it. And Hamas is just looting and stealing all this aid. And the BBC reporter did not challenge them. The BBC reporter did not say, what proof do you have that this is actually happening? And of course, the related question I want to ask you, can you address this, Chris Guttis? Does Hamas hijack aid? But what do you think about this new organization, outfit that's been set up to deliver aid backed by the United States to Palestinians, the director of which has just resigned just the day before it started operating because he said this is nonsense, but apparently they've started delivering aid today. What do you think of that gambit?
Well, let's unpack, because there's about three or four questions there. Firstly, on the BBC, I will not publicly stand up and excoriate the BBC, because the journalists out there must be our friends. Israel wants nothing more than people like me to upset the BBC and for the BBC not to bother with me. So the BBC is an organization where I worked for 23 years, incidentally, where tens of thousands of editorial decisions are made every day. Some are good, some are bad. Some presenters are good, some are bad. Some BBC anchors are responsible journalists, others less so. But I'm not going to call names. I think that, we have to work with what we have, and we have to get our message across in the BBC and in other outlets wherever possible. On the accusation that Hamas is stealing aid, it's a complete lie. Cindy McCain, the American head of the World Food Programme, was on a big American weekend programme just a few days ago, and she was very clear. She said there is no evidence whatsoever that Hamas is stealing aid. And in all the years that I was in UNRWA, there was only one example where you could say that Hamas took aid. And after a huge, we made a public statement about it, huge criticism of Hamas, every single bean was returned. So there just isn't a history of Hamas stealing aid. When you create a starving population and you, throughout this 19-month period, allow in dribs and drabs of aid, there will be food riots. We remember the so-called flour massacre at the end of February 2024, when the Israelis subcontracted out to a bunch of mercenaries a food convoy, and in the middle of the night, they drove some trucks in, parked them right by the Israeli checkpoint. There was a food riot because people were literally starving to death and wanted food for their families. The inexperienced Israeli soldiers opened fire, killed over 100 people, over 700 people were wounded. Hamas are not stealing aid. Israel is creating a situation of total food insecurity where people will riot when they allow in, a drib and drabs of aid. The question you ask about the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, well, it's interesting that no international NGO has agreed to take part in this. They've all just said no. The UN has said no. And the reason why the head of it resigned recently was for the same reason why all these organizations said no. And that is, it cannot distribute aid on the basis of the four humanitarian principles. The first humanitarian principle is that you distribute aid on the basis of need. They call it humanity. Now, they've been told, the people of Gaza have been told, they're going to be distribution centers, one in the north, I think two in the middle, Deir el-Balah and Nusayrat camp, and then one in the south. People are going to have to get to them. And just traveling around Gaza, you get shot. Disabled people can't travel around Gaza. The sick, the elderly, the dying, they can't travel around Gaza. The roads are completely shot to pieces. And even when they get to these distribution centres, there have been so many occasions when Israeli designated so-called safe areas or humanitarian hubs, or call them what you will, have been attacked with indiscriminate and disproportionate weaponry. So the idea that the organisation that's been committing a genocide against you, i.e. the Israeli military, is going to get together with the Americans, the organization or the nation state that has been backing the genocide. These two are somehow going to get together and provide aid on the basis of the four humanitarian principles. It's just an insulting joke. And I fear that if it does carry on, we're going to see food riots, we're going to see things getting out of control. Israel will no doubt make more baseless allegations that Hamas is stealing aid. It's just not true. I mean, there's no evidence of it. It's fake news.
And the remarkable thing that I find really amazing is that Israel actually targets security forces, police officers, security types, who, of course, are working, you know, under the aegis of Hamas. I mean, they're not Hamas members, but they're part of that whole civil infrastructure that Hamas built.
It's absurd. It's absurd to say, we're going to let in aid. Hamas is stealing it. You create a situation of such starvation and insecurity that people riot. And then when the security forces, such as they are in Gaza, try and calm things down, you shoot them. By the way, they also shoot doctors and aid workers. I mean, over 300 members of UNRWA staff have been killed. And hundreds of doctors and medical staff have been killed. So, you know, the idea that this side of the confrontation that's been inflicting these things can suddenly sort of take off its military fatigues and say that they are aid workers, it's nonsense. It's designed to head off criticism. I call it aid washing. It's aid washing. It's designed basically to be a fig leaf and to hide accusations of ethnic cleansing and genocide. It's as simple as that. And that's why this is going on. No other reason, none whatsoever. But it's going to end very badly, because as we saw with the Flower Massacre and others, there will be undoubtedly violence. And of course, it's the innocent starving people of Gaza who are going to be caught in the crossfire. And that's why I say, and that's why others, I mean, Tom Fletcher, the head of OCHA in New York, the Office of the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, the UN's office, he's been very clear that this organization he will not support, and he'll not support it because it is weaponizing aid on behalf of one of the belligerent parties, the Israelis, backed by the Americans, the Germans, the Brits. And it's doing this as a fig leaf. It's doing it partly to say, well, we can't be committing genocide, we're delivering aid. I can't be a war criminal. I'm not using starvation as a weapon of war. We'll say, Mr. Netanyahu, look, I'm letting in aid. We mustn't believe this. The bigger picture is very clear. 50,000 people, more than half of which are women and children, have been killed with mainly indiscriminate and disproportionate weapons or deliberate firing by Israeli snipers. And it's very clear that starvation is being used as a weapon of war. And we should not allow this humanitarian fig leaf, this aid washing, to distract us and to take our eye off the main picture.
And the reality is that, of course, the death toll from U.S. bombs and missiles, but also indirect deaths caused by disease, lack of access to medicines, inability to treat chronic diseases, to get your dialysis, you know, three times a week, and all these other kinds of parallel phenomena, the healthcare situation. The death toll is probably, those two Lancet articles said that the death toll could be as high as 180,000. These days, I'm actually reading, now and then you see the number 200,000. So we're heading for, we're heading for 250,000 dead directly and indirectly.